For November the 1st, 2019, we talk about The Outer Worlds, Jackbox Party Pack 6, and we ask you about gaming while sick. Welcome to Level 303. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're probably going to be joined by Ben here. However, he said he would be 10 minutes late, and it was 20 minutes late, and train gotta leave the station. He would understand. He often tells us to start without him. So if he Kool-Aid mans into this episode, that is A-okay. Yeah,
he probably also rides trains fairly often.
Oh, you know, I think Seattle has transit.
I want him to dress as the Kool-Aid man for Halloween now.
That would be good.
He's
too nice to break through a wall, though. I think he would just kind of open up a door and say, "Hey, guys." that's my impression of Ben.
This is true.
Thank you for understanding us being away last week. I know we're missing more than usual. I was, as of the time we were recording, I think I was somewhere in the air above Illinois, flying back from Portland. The good news is, I mean, I had fun, and it was nice meeting a lot of you out there, or, you know, some of you out there. I don't know about most of you. I probably interfaced with about 100 people. The good news is I've not gotten sick. The bad news is that illness may have transferred to you, Jala.
You
got my con crud.
I have allergies this time of year, and you can't tell now, but I sounded like so much crap on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and yesterday. I have bad allergies. Everything was draining into my throat, and my throat swelled up really, really badly to where I couldn't swallow. So it was pretty nasty. And Friday and Saturday, did not work out or anything, and I just like took really strong medication, and I was just knocked on my ass. But the good news is that I think my voice is so far okay. We will see how it goes as this episode goes. If my voice suddenly starts getting crazy, that's why. And here's me having to clear my throat. But that's okay. Since I've been away last, I completed another Tough Light 18-hour endurance event, as well as the 12-mile Dallas Star Course with one of my online training clients, because I am an online personal trainer at fireheartfitness.com. But I also her daughter, and we did the 12-mile Star Course, and that was really awesome. And both of them are very excited, and we have all registered to do it again next year. And next year they want to do it bigger, better, you know, like knock it out of the park next time. That's cool. Very, very cool. And I served jury duty last week, and I was not picked. And of course I got sick, and that's what I've been up to.
You can either do time to Sudafed, or you can do time to the county court system.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this may be too personal of a question. Did you get a lot of ear infections when you were little?
I did. I didn't get them when I used to live in Miami. It's just Houston. Mm-hmm. I am allergic to Houston.
Right.
And I used to get sick so much that my pediatrician told my mom to just literally give me Dimetapp every single night, regardless of whether I was sick, just to ward off the sickness. And that did work.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I literally had to be fed Dimetapp every day.
Yeah. So. No. Dimetapp was a constant companion me. I was just curious because what you described is real similar to what I have. And I got ear infections so often as a little kid that I had to get tubes twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
they had to totally, go in and like clean out my ears, really, because everything got so stuffed up, multiple times when I was little. But I didn't get to the point of needing tubes, thankfully.
Yeah.
But yeah. I was almost there.
Yeah. At a certain point, I only had like 5% of my hearing. Something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I think I heard Ben. Hey, Ben.
Hey.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. You should have said, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We talked about having you Kool-Aid Man into the episode. We're in the banter. Like we're in at the start. So do not worry.
I can tell.
Yeah. Well,
talking about childhood illness. I know we're in full banter mode right now.
Yeah,
I still think just because I feel like oddly bragging about the most irrational things, I still think on childhood ear problems I have you all beat.
How so?
Yeah, I was I had like 80% hearing loss until I was about 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
you win.
Chella, yeah. Chella, did you have tubes in your ears when you were a kid?
You cut out. Did I have what in my ears?
Did you have tubes in your ear when you were a kid?
Uh-uh, I did not. I was just shy of that, so I did not have that problem.
Yeah. So. Well... I'm very happy that you're here, Chella. It's been a little bit, and I'm happy that your voice is holding out.
Yeah, so far. We're only in the banter.
True. But, past performance, future results. Present performance, future results. David, how about you? What's going on?
Honestly, I know I've said this the last couple of weeks, but not a whole heck of a lot. I'm been doing some woodworking, stuff like that, building a workbench. So that's sort of been a bit of an adventure. But yeah, other than that, not too much. Trying to just get everything together.
Cool. Are you building the workbench in your apartment?
Yeah, I am. So got a thing off Amazon that basically kind of provides the legs, and you just add 2x4s.
Mm-hmm.
And then got a whole bunch of kind of narrow boards for the top cut to length at Home Depot, and just kind of pray them side to side. And then I need to figure out how to then glue all those boards together, and I'll be done.
Nice. Yeah, it'll probably be easier to do woodworking, like making a workbench, after you have a workbench.
Yeah. There is a little bit of a catch-22. Actually, the other thing that's really difficult that's kind of directly related to that is use of like vices and clamps.
Right. You got to have something to clamp to. Yeah.
Yeah, so still looking at those, looking at like potentially doing an some of the old school methods of doing that, where it's just all friction type stuff versus the more modern ones where you're screwing things down.
Right. Yeah.
There's like a whole Japanese art to this too, right? The different cuts that you make in wood so it fits together without falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I just got my workspace in my garage put together after putting it off because the summer was too hot. So I got like pegboard up, and I've got a workbench, which is actually my old IKEA desk. So I'll need to find something I can do, attach a vice to, but it suffices for right now. Yeah,
no, that was definitely 100% my plan B. It was basically just, is IKEA desk or Home Depot going to be easier to get back to my apartment? And it turned out to be Home Depot.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah. Well, you have to share the results.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm curious, you know, as I settle into my, into my weird middle aged man phase. Yeah. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing pretty good. I'll talk about two pieces of media I consumed over the weekend, maybe, if that's okay, that are not game related.
That is A-okay.
I saw BoJack Horseman season 6 part 1. It was pretty great.
Cool.
I like that show. It gets better and better with each season, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then I also saw the movie The Lighthouse last week on Thursday night.
Shit. How was that?
I read the review of that. It sounded really interesting.
It's weird as hell. It's pretty sweet.
I want to see that so bad, but I'd have to drive to Columbus to see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Go ahead.
So I read, you know, a straight up review of it, and still, even after reading it, I couldn't figure out, like, is that horror? Is it like more of like a drama type thing, like a you know, horror adjacent drama? Like, what's its deal?
Yeah, it's like suspenseful adjacent and horror adjacent, but it's not like really either one of those. There's a few moments of like gore-ish type stuff, but like, that's not the point of the movie, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's sure. It's kind of allegorical, I guess, but like, I had no idea what it was meant as I was watching it. I'd like look up things afterwards, but
yeah. I mean, I don't know that director's previous movie, The Witch, was mm-hmm. really hard to categorize in that regards too. Like, it is about spooky stuff, and it is shot in the language of horror, but it's actually like just a weird, not documentary, but like, it's almost like a true stories or a true crime thing a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of attention to detail of the time period, which this movie has as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's shot like square, and it's all black and white, and like, that part's all really beautiful. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Nope, I'm looking. It's still, the closest showtime is still down in Columbus, about an hour from me. So I would need to justify a whole day trip, and I don't know if I can get away for that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm envious. That you've seen it.
It's not a movie you need to see, so don't feel bad or anything like that. Yeah, like, if you just catch it later online, but yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I fell off of BoJack Horseman, not because it got bad, but because it got too real. The season where he's taking care of his mom who has dementia.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, they captured that too well, actually. I might need to take some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gut punches in that season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it ends. They kind of left it on a cliffhanger, so.
Is this the last season?
Yeah, and I think, so in the last season, I'll try to say stuff in broad strokes without spoiling anything. In the last season, they kind of talked about how they were upset that the show kind of, people kind of took from it that it's okay to be like an asshole or depressed or something like that mm-hmm. as a way to like justify their actions. So I think this season they're kind of trying to reconcile that or like try and place the importance on taking responsibility for your actions.
That's good.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I think that's some banter. I don't really have anything. I could talk more about garage stuff. I bought a new leaf blower yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like a handheld tornado. I'm disappointed because I thought it was a leaf blower, but it's actually it's a jetpack. It made quick work of those leaves on my property.
Cole, what's the most homeownery tool that you own?
The most homeownery tool that I own?
Yeah.
I think that probably it's not one tool, but it's two tools. But it's the fact that I own two of them that makes it. I have two cordless drills, one for mm-hmm. out in the garage and one for inside the house.
Okay. Decent answer. Yeah.
Yeah. With separate battery chargers for both. Because so you know sometimes you're inside and something really needs to be drilled or screwed in, or unscrewed, and you don't want to go out. So you gotta get the one in your utility closet. Because life is all about dwindling options.
Oh man. Turning into BoJack Horseman ourselves.
No, it's I'm proud. I am proud of my little slice of land. It's fine. It's fine.
Check out some time old school bit braces. I still maintain the best way to drill a thing.
Old school bit braces. Are those like a handheld drill?
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. You know, it's kind of like having a hand-operated coffee grinder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we've got the usual kind of show for you today. The brief. Nope, sorry. That's the old one. Let me update this here. Shuffle papers, the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The grind.
The grind. Jala, it's been the longest since you've been on, so I'm going to go to you first.
Okay, well, in all of this time, I have been very busy, and so I played one game.
Okay.
Ouch, David, damn it.
Mm. Yeah, there's a...
squeaky chair.
Yeah, the squeaky chair is kind of it cuts through, like...
everything.
Like a fire. Like a knife. Yeah, like a fire alarm. I will send...
inside drill, not an outside drill.
I will further trim the levels from that computer that are going to you, Jala. Continue. Sorry,
my bad.
Okay, so I have only been playing Danganronpa 3, and at this point, I am about halfway through Chapter 3, which Monokuma tells me is halfway through the game also. The game is very kind in informing you as such. So, I still don't like any of the characters over much, although Kaito is becoming less annoying. He is the ultimate astronaut guy.
Right, right.
So,
as opposed to all those crappy astronauts.
Well, he hasn't even been to space, so all of this stuff is stupid. Like, also, the ultimate detective is a junior detective who isn't actually a detective yet, mm-hmm. and things like that. So is the plot of this one
we've, like, killed off all the ultimate people, and now we're on to the B tier?
I don't know. I'm sure there's lots of death involved, but I haven't gotten to the world has ended and everybody's crazy. You know, of course, like, the last game, everybody ended up being, like, cyber creations and things, so I'm pretty sure that is how this works, too. But, David and I were talking about it, that it's really ridiculous that the ultimate astronaut and the ultimate inventor lady in this game, like, he hasn't played it, but just from hearing me talk about it, he's like, so they've actually got, like, a smart booby lady. And I was like, no.
No,
she is not presented as being smart. She speaks extremely crassly and is very, very annoying. And then they also make her, like, super, like, she's an exhibitionist, and she's also super sexual with the ultimate robot guy who, you know, is in here.
I feel like that is in character if you're the ultimate inventor. Like,
oh, I know that is, and like even the exhibitionist thing, I laughed at it, and I was like, okay, why not? That's cool. But like, just the rest of her manner of speech and everything is just like too much, and she's just so annoying. I would like her if she weren't that over the top, but that's kind of been like my ongoing complaint about Danganronpa in general, is that they're just, all the characters are so pushed into an archetype that they are just too much of that archetype or whatever. Yeah. They're just too much, they're too extreme for me to really like be like, oh yeah, I really like this character a lot. Like, I feel for this character or whatever. But anyway, like, they are doing a better job on this game so far with various elements, in my opinion. They have more interesting and compelling motives for killing. You know, they go through this, like, super long, melodramatic, drawn-out thing at the end of every trial, all two of them that I've played so far. But both of the two trials I've played so far, they have a long, melodramatic, drawn-out thing explaining, you know, why this person killed and what their reasons are. And everybody feels bad that they ended up, you know, selecting the correct murderer mm-hmm. and things like that.
Even though all of them would have died if they didn't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like, all of the characters in this game so far have been pretty, pretty happy to be like, I'll throw myself in front of this Ekisol, which is like this giant robot thing that's controlled by the Mono Cubs, which are Monokuma's children, that are also, you know, on Monokuma's side until recently when they...
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, I can't stand them.
You would think that between the ultimate astronaut, you know, robot and inventor, you could come up with, say, like a fairly decent ultimate gun.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Like the ultimate robot can play tapes back on a recording device, and then he can warm his breath. Like that's his special powers as of this moment.
He's the ultimate Teddy Ruxpin.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So he's pretty useless. And you know, anyway, and then the ultimate astronaut, as much as he went through this whole list of things that he has to learn and be good at in order to be an astronaut, you know, learn all of these different histories, learn all this survival stuff, all this other stuff he has to be very good at. Like, even though that's the case, every single character calls him an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody treats him like an idiot. It's
the Major General thing.
But anyway, like, it's just like, this could be a little less, you know, I'm going to use the word tropey. It could be a little less of this, you know, just
right.
But it's not to the point that it's made me mad. I think I just don't have enough energy to be mad
right
at this point between all the other things that are going on right now. I can't muster the energy to get angry at this game at this point. So I am sorry, listeners, that I am disappointing you and not having a tirade and slamming my fist on the desk. I'm sick and debilitated at the moment.
If the twist of two didn't get you, I'll be curious if the one in store for you here is gonna.
I don't know. Yeah. But I thought that was ridiculous. The twist in two, I was just like, that's stupid. Whatever, that's stupid.
Oh.
Ridiculous. Okay, whatever. You know, like I liked the character that died pretty decently.
Right.
But I was like, I understand this is a ridiculous game. There is a point where my suspension of disbelief just kind of ends, you know, and, you know, like, I understand how over the top and ridiculous this game is, but, no. So yeah. Anyway, just like, that character's alleged role and everything, no.
Yeah.
No, that was ridiculous.
Are the cases still engaging for you to solve, like the trials and stuff?
I was going to say that the trials themselves, the mini games in the trials themselves. Remember how in Danganronpa 2, I was talking about how I hated the mini games because they didn't have anything to do with the act of trying to debate and things like that, like, or the process of thinking through everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this game. Not all of the minigames, but a lot of the minigames feel more like they are trying to play towards like a graphic look or a design for how they play out that works to give you that feeling of having an actual debate and having to work through obstacles in like the Hangman minigame. There's like a spotlight that pops up and, you know, like it illuminates all the little orbs of the letters and stuff briefly. And it's kind of like, you know, that's you searching for the words, you know, and things like that. So like it relates the way that the games are changed in this one seem to make it relate more to that whole thought process, the way that I was complaining they didn't in Danganronpa 2. So it does feel like they made improvements on that. Now, I still feel the trials are like long as hell.
Yeah.
They did improve that whole comic at the end of the chapter thing too, because they actually, on all the panels that you have to fill in, you know, like to give the recap of how the murder happened at the very mm-hmm. end of the trial, if you hover the cursor over it, it will ask you a question, and it will say, like, well, you know, what was used to do da da da, and then you can pick from your options, and all of them have text as well to clearly tell you what these things are that yeah. you've got in your inventory, so you can match them up. So it's a lot clearer, and it's a lot less stressful and, you know, frustrating, because I know it wasn't just me. It was several listeners who said that they just could not stand those comic panel ending, yeah. you know, wrap up.
No, they were really, really bad.
Yeah, and so they did make improvements on all of that. So this game has that over prior titles, where it definitely, you know, is doing a better job of all of that. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, too, I was surprised. The Mono Cubs are intolerable. Okay, there were originally five of them. They are slowly dying. And as they die off, like, there's this whole dynamic between them that, like, they're all stupid nonsense characters, but, like, there's slowly but surely, like, a power shift that goes on between all of the mono animals. Yeah. And, like, currently Monokuma has been overthrown by the little robot baby who is terrorizing the other two and mm-hmm. killed two more of them.
Yeah.
and like, you know, Monokuma now cannot talk and is just kind of like all frayed on the edges and stuff. And it's just kind of like he shows up and is sort of actually helping you along.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, actually.
Yeah, and so he's helping you because his children overthrew him. And anyway, like, it's this whole nother layer of dynamic and story that's going on that mm-hmm. is actually, it started out really like, oh my God, I can't stand this. And then it's actually turning into something a lot more amusing as it goes.
Yeah.
So I have to give this game props for that, too. And the beginning also in this one did not seem nearly as slow as the beginning in either of the prior games. Like, this one seems to have a better sense of pace to it.
Mm-hmm.
At least so far, about halfway through the game. So, and I was surprised. The thing is that I've liked the characters a little bit more, like, basically right before they die.
Right.
Some of the characters who have died, like, I like them just before, like, I go, oh, okay, well, maybe I want to spend some of my time with that character, and then boom, they're dead, and I don't get to hear their story anymore because they have just died. And I know that's something that Dennis, huh?
It's like the game developers are trying to maximize tragedy.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. And, like, Dennis has talked about that before when he was playing Danganronpa, mm-hmm. That he had that experience. But I actually hadn't until this game really felt like that.
Yeah.
For the most part, in the prior games, when they were trying, it felt like they were trying too hard to make you like characters.
Right.
At least for me, from my perspective. But, you know, in this one, it doesn't quite feel like that. So a lot of things are actually smoothed over and seem a little bit better than in prior titles, generally speaking. So yeah, like I'm not mad at this game. Like, I was mad at the ending of the first game and how I got mad at about what was it, the first third of the second game that I was really, really mad at.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so it's pretty decent, and I'm gonna finish it up as I get there over time, you know, as I can find time around other things that I'm doing. But I have no more events coming up mm-hmm. this year, so there is at least that. You know, I've got other things that I'm doing, but just not event training, so
yeah.
That should at least help normalize my schedule a little bit.
Nice. But,
so I know that Ben and David have not played these, so I don't know that they have any questions or not. Or Cole, like, since you've played it, do you have anything, any comments, any questions, any thoughts?
Whenever I listen to people talk about this game, I just try and figure out what the plot of the game is. That's an eternal mystery. So.
Well, the problem is that we can't ever talk to you about the actual plot of the game, because that's kind of like the big spoiler at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, all of the stuff that leads up to that ending is just kind of like the fluff. And the ending is the part that's supposed to like really suck it to you or whatever, yeah. For good or ill. I got so mad at the first game and wanted to throw my, that was the first time ever on this show that I wanted to throw anything. I got very mad at that game at the ending. I was so mad at the end of that game. And then the second game, I kind of was like expecting more of that kind of bullshit. So I was kind of dissatisfied, but there were some things that I was interested in still that were kind of left like teased and then left off the board.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens in this game.
Yeah.
Is this supposed to be the ending of an arc or the ending of the entire thing? Or is it open-ended again to where like they're going to be a four?
It feels open-ended. It is not conclusive, like the end of Zero Time Dilemma is.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like it's hard to talk about the story of them too, because like the moment to moment, you're spending so much of it trying to solve the murders, and you spend so much of it like dealing with the different levels of, you know, deceit and intrigue between the different students, and each game has, you know, I think five or six of those, like almost they would almost be like in comics, like an arc, like, oh, this would be a trade paperback of this case. Right.
Yeah.
But then throughout the course of that, the game is revealing why you are trapped in this situation and what, you know, like what led to you in particular being there and why are all of you together like that. So they're like bigger answers that are doled out. And so it's like, do you talk about the individual murders? Well, it's like, well, no, that gives away the mystery. It's all about mystery. But the problem is sometimes when the answer to the mystery is revealed, it's dumb as fuck.
Yeah. So, and there is one more thing. There are hidden Monokuma toy thingies that you can get in every chapter. I have found like four of them, but it looks like there's room on the shelf for a fifth one. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the fifth one is that I keep missing in each of these chapters so far, but it's weird that it's consistent.
I don't know. I did not engage with that.
You did not engage with that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It is good and nice that you're back to exploring the school in first person, as opposed to being in the side scrolling exploration kind of stuff.
I definitely like that a lot better as well. Mm-hmm. And I like that there is, you know, like you still have a run and all of that stuff, so you can get around quickly, and it has the fast travel option oftentimes. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I got to mention it. Hotel Kuma Sutra. Really?
Of course. You know, the Bear Sutra.
There is a casino area that has as one of the prizes a key of love, which I'm pretty sure goes to the hotel, the love hotel next door. And I don't know exactly how that plays into all the characters, but I'm pretty sure. Huh?
All that I can say is I did not engage with that system.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that. That's probably something you can give to one of the characters. Maybe. And I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it looks like it's supposed to be an item that you can gift, because everything else that you can get in the casino is a gift item. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that you have like,
go ahead.
These things that you guys keep bringing up, and like, you know, things, you know, mechanics of parts of the game you didn't really engage with, that sort of thing. Why do you play this series?
It's like reading a manga. Like, there's enough cool inventive stuff in it. Like, that's what drew me forward with it. Like, you know, I can complain about like how outsized stuff is, but like, I don't know. I think we established this back when you played Danganronpa 1 after I did Jala. I just haven't been inundated with those tropes so much that I'm sick of them. You know?
Yeah. Well, see, I actually am engaging with all of the systems in this game. I just am not like. I haven't got the key of love is very expensive in the casino, and I haven't prioritized getting one because I don't know if I really want to have a sex scene or something. with one of the characters, because right. I guess that's what happens.
It's got to be setting up like an expectation for it to subvert, because that's what literally everything else does. Like they're dating mechanics in all of these games, but it is never romantic. Like it's more good.
But this game also, this particular title has not had very much of the sex stuff that the other titles did.
Right, right.
So it makes me kind of feel like, I mean, other than the inventor lady and the robot guy, mm-hmm. and like the inventor lady also being an exhibitionist, mm-hmm. You know, other than that, you know, like there hasn't been much else, whereas the other games put it out there like immediately, like yeah. here is this character that has to fall in every awkward position and show off all of her goodies to everybody in the room, you know, and we have to tactfully put something in place so you do not see her naughty bits, you right. know. So that being
goodies
said,
goodies and naughty bits.
Yes, goodies and naughty bits. But
it's a very anyway, Halloween themed so, episode.
indeed. So yeah, I do not know. I half expect that the Hotel Kuma Sutra literally is like there's some kind of a thing. So right. I might have to try to save up for a key of love, I guess is what I'm saying, so that I can experiment and see what the hell happens when you give it to somebody.
Right.
Could always just pull up a YouTube.
I could do that.
Yeah, no, it's
I could do that, but I mean, like, wouldn't you rather? I know the listeners probably would rather have the horror of my reaction if I do it myself in the game and come back and report in about what just happened.
Right. Okay, yeah,
Something gets lost if I go and look at a YouTube, you know.
I've looked up a description of it.
Okay.
And I will remain mum.
Okay.
The information exists if the listener is curious. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, no, just like David, when you said like, oh, if you don't engage with this system, like, you know, why do you play? It's relatively minor. Like, I did engage with the like, who do you want to spend your like free class period with? Because that's a way to learn backstory and stuff. So you just pick a character who you're interested in, and go hang out with them, and it increases the relationship, and that just, you know, makes them a little bit more forthcoming with you. And then like with the little statues and stuff, I don't like collectibles in games very much. That is sure. not something that scratches any particular itch for me. So I don't chase after them.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that since I haven't gotten all of them so far, that it's not going to make any difference insofar as achievos or rewards in the game are concerned. Right. So I don't see that there's actually a point in me pursuing them from here, because I missed some.
No.
But anyway...
No.
If any listener can inform me about what, okay, there is definitely another one that is missing. So where the hell is the missing one? Because I like looked everywhere.
No.
So.
But I don't have any other questions or comments. Everything that I can ask would like nudge you toward what's actually going on. That's not fair to you. So. Yeah. Okay. Let's see here. Is that all you have, Jala?
That is it.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
I had two, only have one game. I've been playing The Outer Worlds since Ooh. Last Friday. Yeah.
Nice.
Is anyone else on this train?
Yes, I am also on this.
I would very much like to be on this train, and I want to hear what both of you think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm only like one world into the game. David, I'm not sure how far you are.
So I'm just about to do like right at the beginning. They kind of have a Megaton versus Tenpenny Tower moment. And sure. I'm there.
Okay. Yeah, this game is very much like a Fallout game. I haven't really seen too much that makes it distinct from that other than the art style of it.
Right.
most of the main mechanics are there. Instead of like the VAT system, you have a slow down time mechanic, which is pretty similar. Mm-hmm. A lot of dialogues, which can be good. A lot of side quests, which can be good. It feels like Fallout kind of in a Knights of Old Republic type setting, where it's like there's very distinct like planets or ecosystems you can go to. And there's, you know, a whole batch of side quests that are interconnected that you can explore as you go to an area. The writing seems pretty decent so far. There's a lot of fun choices in the dialogue that you can pick, where you can just like make fun of people to their face or, I don't know, or, just be very aggressive with people or whatever.
I was going to say it helps that a significant portion of, the people you're interacting with are more or less brainwashed.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should briefly say what kind of like the setting of the game. You can tell from the previews, you're basically in a very corporate setting. Like all of the businesses that you're interacting with are extensions of corporations that are finding and mining the planet, similar to like Alien or Aliens. And they kind of do it to even more of a satirical like edge to it. So it's a very exaggerated look at that type of lifestyle. Some mild examples is like the people don't even own their own bodies. They're products of the corporation. So it's like the most extreme version of indentured servitude.
Yeah. So it's like one of the fairly early missions, like, someone has basically committed suicide because of the horrible working conditions, and now the rest of the workers have to figure out how to pay back the corporation for the cost of the body, because the corporation considers that suicide to be a form of vandalism.
That's the bleakest thing I've ever heard. Oh my god.
Yeah, but you like it doesn't hit that hard because you have this very pretty like glowy art style.
Yeah.
Like that kind of cuts against
It also has, I feel like I may be going to spoil one joke, but
how dare you?
But like it also has, I really like the way they do the reveal of that, because they're like, the person who's explained this to you, the way they explain it is like now I have to pay for it, because, you know, I'm the closest closest relation, and a couple of things later, they're like, yeah, he does have a family. And you could, one of your options is you can call him out and be like, wait, I thought you said you're the closest relation. And it's like, yeah, when we found his body, I was the closest in relation to it. It's okay. Like, that's both horrible and kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, that's I didn't expect it to be that dark. Good bleak. God.
Yeah.
It stands to reason, but it still caught me off guard.
Yeah. I'm still kind of undecided on the game. Like it seems fine so far. I'm hoping there's like more to do, maybe. Mm-hmm. As I go to other places besides the first world. I'm hoping that like the upgrade system is more interesting. One thing I really like about the system is they are very explicit with what the checks are for each of the skills. Mm-hmm. So when you go to intimidate somebody, it'll have the number next to it, like 25, and it'll be grayed out if you don't meet it or filled in if you do meet it.
Well, the big difference between what Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas was New Vegas actually showed you the thresholds and got rid of the stupid percent chance stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that part's nice. And then another part is you gain experience each time you do one of those options. So mm-hmm. if you do like an intimidate because you have it unlocked, that'll give you experience to level up.
Well, that's good because it might bypass a combat encounter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they make, with that, they, compared to previous games, it seems like they do it, make a lot more use of it. you know, part of it is, at least in the first area, there's kind of a little bit of a Idiocracy vibe in that, like, if your character has virtually any points in, like, medicine, like, if you have, like, say, 10 out of 100 in the medicine skill, you are literally the most knowledgeable about medicine on the entire planet.
Okay, this one goes in your mouth, this one goes in your butt. Wait, yeah. No, yeah, switch exactly. It.
So, yeah. so you will routinely be in situations where you'll just be like solving, you know, medical things or whatever that should be super simple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have something interesting too with the upgrade system where they have like the skills in batches of three. Mm-hmm. So like when you upgrade, you have 10 points to put into your skills. And so if you upgrade the batch of three or whatever, each of the three skills get upgraded one, and that it works like that up until they get to 50 out of 100. And then you have to choose an individual skill of the three to upgrade. So right. Like, I think like lock picking and computer hacking are in the same branch. So you can upgrade those together to a certain point, but then you have to it's kind of a slower upgrade if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have checkpoints, like basically abilities that are unlocked, and each of those skills at every interval of 20, so 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, they have like special abilities that you can unlock, like being able to hack a machine shut for 3 seconds so that you can like run away or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the upgrade system is interesting. I still wish there was more of like a Knights of the Old Republic type thing where there's kind of like tiered skills you can unlock that kind of like impact combat more. They have a perk system on top of that where it does things like increase the amount you can carry or increase your running speed and stuff like that. But none of them really feel that, game changing. But yeah, so we'll see. I'm still like kind of like a question mark on how I'll feel about this game. But it's pretty early for me. I've only put in like 3 or 4 hours, I think.
I was going to say one thing with the stat system that I do think is kind of a interesting change or innovation is all of the skills have 2 stats that. You know, 2 of your core attributes that basically affect them. And the way that plays out generally is most of these skills, one of the attributes will be what would be like traditionally a combat focused attribute. So like, you know, strength, dexterity, you know, something that you'd expect to be associated with combat, and then the other one is generally one of the kind of quote-unquote like role-playing stats like charisma, intelligence, perception, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the result of that is for example, I have a fair my character's fairly good at persuasion, but I didn't put any extra points in like charisma or anything. But because my character's I think very intelligent, he can basically end up being persuasive, things like that.
Yeah. Well, New Vegas would have int checks in addition to like skill checks and stuff like that. So I can see that
right.
That them working to codify that a little bit more.
Right. The other thing that I haven't seen be super impactful, but seems like kind of an interesting idea, is that all of the communication skills, basically, was it lie, intimidate, and persuade, have a chance of generating a combat effect. So basically, like intimidate, you can temporarily like cause the opponent to flee, or one of the other ones kind of causes them to cower in place, you know, those sorts of things.
That's so really cool. Like, it's not just a dump for conversation, like it can across the systems.
Yeah.
I mean, this all sounds really good to me. Like, how is the combat in this?
I'd say it's like a maybe slightly less good than Fallout because you don't have the VAT system that kind of pauses things.
Right.
You just have like a slowdown mechanic, mm-hmm. but it's not as like I feel like Fallout would be harder if you were playing it in real time than you were playing this mm-hmm. game in real time.
Right.
Like here you can kind of like run behind something and go and shoot something. And it's like pretty obvious, like, yeah, you can kill these people or no, you can't really kill these people yet. Yeah. For the most part, on the first planet, you can just kind of kill everything, so it's not too big of an issue. I think there's, like, one group that you kind of have to circle back to later.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, this it's probably seems a little less unusual to me just because Fallout 76 has a similar mechanic where, that sort of, pseudo slows down time because, you know, in a multiplayer game, you can't really, just have the world pause for everyone. So instead, it just kind of fudges, time dilation.
Does like what Fear Multiplayer did.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd agree with Ben. It's basically think like the old Fallout games, but with slightly better shooting.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
We're good.
Are you playing on PC or
I'm playing on
console.
I'm playing on console, PlayStation 4.
See, I think that would probably almost be a deal breaker for me, just because one thing this game does really, really problematically is its graphic settings are really jacked up.
Mm.
It by default has pretty significant motion blur, and then it has really, really aggressive chromatic aberration. Mm. So like everything looks like you just got like punched in the face and are seeing stars.
Yeah, it's like a shot on like a mid-2000s camera phone.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which, it's a little bit unfortunate because it actually does look really cool and adds to, the game has a really cool kind of, like retro sci-fi type of look, which I think adds to it. But it just, at least for me, causes so much freaking eye strain.
Yeah. I just said like motion blur. I mean, so I guess my question is, on console, are you able to turn the motion blur off? Because that might affect what I get on, actually.
I haven't noticed a problem on console playing it, right? But I'm also very not observant of those types of issues, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah, I know at least on PC, there's a option. There is a motion blur option you can turn off. However, it's not clear to me. It seems like I went in and actually modified config files, and it seemed like that turned it off even more or less.
Hmm. Yeah.
But
the bummer is, and I know that the Epic Game Store versus Steam thing is a bit of a hornet's nest, but like my preferred way to play games now is download it on Steam and play it over the Steam Link. So, like, mm-hmm. have it on computer, but play it, in the comfort of my living room,
mm-hmm.
In case I decide I want to get up there and, it gives you the options. But I don't know if I can do that with Epic Game Store games.
To be fair, that sort of consideration of which corporation should you buy it from is entirely thematically appropriate.
Very in theme, yeah. My only other question for both of you would be like, what are your characters like? Well, like, are you building your characters out of, like, a concept, or is it just like what seems cool in the moment? I'll go to you first, Ben.
I was playing around with character creation. I wasn't like too attached to what I was doing, but then about halfway through, I noticed that my guy kind of looked like the Joker, so I just made his hair green, gave him a palish face. It's like, yeah, that's fine enough. I'm not trying to ride the wave of the recent movie or anything like that. It was just a coincidence.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I usually in these games just try to make my character look like myself because I am boring. And then in terms of like I guess, quote-unquote class setup. I'm putting a lot of points into stealth and the science skills.
Okay.
Engineering, stuff like that. And then I'm kind of trying to use a lot of my, you know, the skills you can pick up via fringe benefits to cover my speaking skills.
Okay.
And then I'm probably eventually going to have to get, you know, at least one weapon skill. Mm-hmm. So I haven't quite made up my mind on that.
Yeah, they kind of split it, the combat, into two, where you can either do guns or sticks that you beat people with, like melee. So, mm-hmm. But, you know, they did a good job in New Vegas with that. So that's probably a viable option, but I'm always too scared to try that.
Yeah, it always seems like it's going to limit you.
So as a side note, to what degree... I know how many companions you've unlocked. Does it continue to be just your companions are just the crew of Firefly?
Yeah, so far that adds up.
Yeah, because so far I have a spunky mechanic and a
religious person.
Yeah, and a preacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not 100% like it, but yeah, that is funny that you mention it.
Yeah. No, I'm disappointed that neither of you have gone with the duck feed standard, but that's fine.
Wait, what's the duck feed standard for this?
Oh no, the duck feed standard for any kind of role playing game like this is small guns and talkie-talkie.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guns and talkie-talkie.
It's just a reference to an old episode title. That's it's fine.
I do have to say one thing that I do feel is a little weird in the first section.
Yeah.
Is I feel like the first section is probably something that will an area that I'll come across a little bit different to like Mia Ben versus international audience, because the first section is to a significant degree like the kind of corporate problem you're dealing with is the fact that there's a plague and they're severely rationing healthcare.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like, no, that's just kind of I'm living that one.
Yeah. No, that's you know, I was gonna get more. I was gonna get more depressing about that, but I'm not going to. Oh, Jella, did you have any questions about this?
No.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm excited to get this. I need to get a little bit further ahead on assignment stuff, though.
You should stream playing this, Cole.
Hmm. Do you think that would be interesting?
I would be interested in it, so I'll speak for myself.
Yeah, okay. I think it definitely would.
I will take that under advisement, and that would affect what I get it on too. I've got this new PC. I might as well give it a, I guess, new as of 8 months ago. PC, give it a spin, see how it goes. Mm-hmm. Nice. Was that all you had, Ben?
Yep.
Cool. David, was that all you had?
So the only other thing is a little bit continuing on with Ghost Recon. Overall, as you've likely seen in, you know, a lot of recent coverage, like, it's not a great game, so I'm not going to go super far into it. It's apparently, you know, single-handedly being blamed for Ubisoft missing its numbers.
Oh, they have so many different, like, that's their fault.
Yeah.
Huh.
And they're now saying that they're, like, definitely going to make it right, so we'll see how that goes. That being said, there's, you know, are a couple of things that are very, you know, noteworthy, or at least kind of entertaining. One is, it's... has incredibly janky controls, most notably for if you're trying to descend down any sort of like hilly area. in that
fall over?
Well, in say anything around maybe a 45 degree grade or steeper, your character will start like sliding, and so you then can't stop, and it'll start draining stamina. And if you run out of stamina, you'll just start like tumbling down the hill.
And then does that cause you to take damage, or
that causes you to take small amounts of damage? I've never actually died from that, but it's more an issue of like almost the entire area is like mountainous biomes. So just getting virtually anywhere is just a pain. Which seems like a major oversight.
That seems if getting over mountains is a problem and the game takes place in mountains, they might have been able to avert that by playing their game to see if it was fun.
Yep. Another thing that's similarly kind of an oddity is the game is very, very aggressive in terms of like if say that you like land a helicopter, and the way the land is, it's sort of on part of it's, I have no idea what the landing things on a helicopter are, struts or whatever.
Yeah, I call them struts.
It's kind of like propped up on a vehicle, or say two vehicles are kind of parked so that they're physically in contact, or say you park a boat and do the kind of thing where you'll sort of partially beach it and get off. Any of those scenarios, the vehicle will continuously take damage. And so, like, a minute later or so, it'll suddenly just explode. The end result of that is it's not uncommon. I can't tell either for vehicles to spawn that way or for, like, NPCs to just, driving AI is something that's not great in any game I've ever played. So but the problem is it also has kind of a global alert system. So the end result of that is it's fairly common when you'll be stealthing around and just all of a sudden a vehicle will explode that you had literally no interaction with, and the entire compound will go on alert.
That's fucking garbage.
Yeah, it's another one of those, like, you guys probably should have caught that.
So. Yeah, no, it sounds like this thing was rushed.
Yeah, the other thing that's, again, just kind of funny and, like, in some respects I kind of appreciate, but is mostly weird, is you start out the game with Walker, basically, with the Punisher, killing off most of your squad, and he's kind of the big bad. And you start off with two missions. One is the mission, ultimately the mission chain that is the actual game, and then the other is the final mission to basically go into this, super high security, home base and like take them out. The thing is, like, this being an open world game, I'd argue a fairly insignificant amount of just dicking around, running around unlocking weapons and doing side missions, things like that. And pretty quickly found myself of the appropriate level to do that final mission, having only completed 7% of the actual story.
Okay.
And I I went and tried it, and you can, in fact, just go in and kill him and beat the game.
I mean, you can do that in Breath of the Wild, too.
Yeah.
So this game is equally as good to Breath of the Wild.
Exactly.
David Moneysmith, 2019.
So overall, I kind of like that from like an open world standpoint, although one problem with it is that in the final, the cutscene leading up to like the final boss fight, your characters will make references to events in the games that haven't happened. You know, most notably, and I'm kind of going to, you know, whatever, spoiler this, except that it's even without this, it's very obvious.
No, spoilers, that's doing us a service. Go ahead.
Yeah. One of your teammates that like survives is, you know, secretly in league with the bad guys.
Right.
The only point problem is, and they have a sort of very simple like investigation system where you have to discover clues, basically gather intelligence to find things out. The only problem is, I found the intelligence that showed that he was a traitor before I even met him. and I guess that's the thing, is basically in the final cutscene, they like reference, he's like, you made me kill my friend. It's like, no, I totally haven't yet.
Weird.
Actually, I kind of
like the idea of them planting like evidence that if you like go through and actually read all those files, you can figure out story beats. I think that's kind of cool, but I'm sure that this game is not a good game. So.
No,
this is like
if it was Alpha Protocol, I would believe that was intentional. This just sounds like sloppy.
Yeah.
It's again, I think I referenced last time. I think you know, this is original. This was kind of the analysis of, I think, is whatever the podcast is that Giant Bomb does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this very much seems like a game where the developers, writers, whoever, were actually making a really, really awesome game, and that at some point someone from corporate came in and was like, yeah, we're going to need you to make a game as a service. Also, this needs to, you know, release next month.
Yeah, yeah. The key to making a successful game is the element of surprise. I'm about to say the elephant of surprise. And then they pull a lever and it releases, catching everybody by surprise. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because there are a lot of features in this game that are really, really cool that just aren't nearly baked enough.
No. Well,
so there you have it.
I don't know why you're still playing that game. Oh, well, thank you for sharing. That's I'm happy. It's fun to get dispatches from that. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
And as for myself, ain't played shit. Okay, that's not right. I've played stuff, but it's mostly been for shows. I started streaming something that's pretty cool, but I want to finish it before I give a summation. So,
Jackbox 6.
Oh, fuck! Jackbox 6. Yeah, real quick. We did the Duck Feed Jackbox on this. I'm kind of lukewarm on Jackbox 6, honestly.
What?
Okay. So Trivia Murder Party 2 is actually really, really good. They've done a lot of really good stuff to mitigate the playtime of that, which I thought was the biggest problem. Like, if you sat down to do Trivia Murder Party, it would be like a 35-minute throw to get done with it. Although
I'm not seeing a downside, but
I don't know. Maybe for me, as somebody who's like, I'm going to stream this for 2 hours a month and then during DuckStream, and you know, it was hard to fit in. It was not as nimble as something like Quiplash, right? However, like, they've added a lot of, you know, a lot of fun, you know, like sudden death mini games into it. The questions, you know, new questions are always good. It seems harder this time, which I enjoy. And there's one particular rule change at the very end, when you are racing to get out of the house, you have to, so the, to get out of the house, you have to answer all three of the, you have to get a perfect answer to the trivia question that it gives you, or else you're going to be rejected, which means that like, I don't know, like, it adds more drama to that already very dramatic section of the game.
Mm-hmm.
The other games are a little bit disappointing to me.
I had a lot of fun watching you guys play the Alien Human one.
The Alien Human one is a real exception. I was actually really enjoying that. So they've done like a werewolf or mafia style game before. Like, hey, you need to figure out who is doing crossplay in this. This mm-hmm. is really interesting because all of you are crew members on a spaceship, but three mm-hmm. A certain number of you are shape-shifting aliens. And every round, a different captain is picked, and you have to do different, like, tests. Like, you select different chambers to go into, and you select certain people do particular things, like responding to a prompt, by writing things down or by drawing things. And the aliens are given slightly different prompts, and everybody has to figure out, like, oh, which of you is the alien? Because you answered a similar but slightly different question. It was total chaos. When we played it, but it was really fun chaos, and I'm looking forward to playing it again. It would be much more interesting if, like, everybody who was involved was on Discord so you could talk things out, because
yeah.
part of the fun of Werewolf is, you know, bluffing and lying to each other. good.
As somebody who doesn't like to lie, I like this version better.
Yeah. And as someone who enjoys the deceit part, the deceit portion of Werewolf, who in the past has, in the first round, said, "Vote to kill me," just to throw people off. Yes, I can see, like, you know, because they had to make it mechanical in some way, right? So it's called Push the Button, is what that minigame was. The other two that we did, the Dictionarium and Joke Boat was better than I expected it to be, and Dictionarium was much worse. Joke Boat is like you take component parts, you take like basically Mad Libs plus joke construction in order to write jokes that people vote on. So it's a little bit like Quiplash. And then Dictionarium,
like the podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. And Dictionarium is real. What was really disappointing, because I expected it to be like Balderdash, where it would give you a word and you had to write a fake, but plausible definition of it, in order to trick people. So it'd be like fibbage, but no, it's just a made up word and everybody writes a made up, definition. And you just joke on what's funniest, and like that's a real bummer. I was expecting it to be more like fibbage, and it wasn't. So, oh well, they can't all be winners. They've never all been winners.
Gotta get its deception.
I mean, it's a fun element of these social games, you know, like, I don't know. but yeah, it's you know, none in the past, not every game in every pack has been a winner. Trivia Murder Party 2 is obviously where all of the effort went in this, and that really shows. And Push the Button is way more fun than it has any right to be.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Cool. Thank you for reminding me of that, although I wanted to skip myself to make the episode shorter. So it's on you, Ben.
So you're welcome, old sorry audience.
Thank you, Ben.
I also heard that apparently on stream, the collective has decided that when the world ends, Jala and I will be, forming a warlord army or some such.
Something like that. Yeah, I think that was more in the Fatal Frame streams. But the uh-huh. idea being, you know, who of the Duckfeed crew would be most reliable in a jam like that. Kind of came down to Jala for resolve and you for just like survival knowledge. I disqualified myself because I would be the guy who goes crazy in the first week and has to be put down. So
see, we were talking, we think Jala and I think you would end up being like the Wasteland Wanderer. Like, we just replace dog meat with Greta, and
I need medicine to live in society. I know lots of people do, but I cannot be relied on. So, oh man. And Ben, you said you were going to get taken out by what, like a raider at some point?
Anything. I would die so quickly.
Right. Like water goes away, and you know, bad water will get you real quick. How do you feel about multiplayer?
multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you ask the nice people? Or would you rather I read it so you can save your throat meat?
I'll go ahead and read it. So this week, because I am struggling with illness, it is an illness-themed question. One part of it is from Raghavan, so thank you, Raghavan, and the other part is from me. So two-part question. Part one, what game has made you feel physically ill? And part two, what games do you play when you're under the weather? So that's the question.
Somebody here took a straight up pot shot at me here. So we will see. So I will get us started here with Casey, who says, one, I got a concussion playing Pokemon Blue on the original Game Boy. I was 10 and walked headfirst into a stop sign, fell down and whacked my head on the sidewalk. The Game Boy was okay, though. I mean, the Game Boy was always going to be okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't wreck a Game Boy. Those things are, like, everlasting.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the system that, like, in the first Gulf War or something, like, a soldier got shot and the Game Boy, like, saved his life and still worked?
The version of it that I heard was that the Game Boy was one of the only things that's, like, it survived a shelling that happened at some point. But yeah, like early Nintendo hardware was just infamous for being preternaturally durable. Yeah, so of course it was going to be okay. Bad news about your head, though.
So, Game Boys and Twinkies.
Yeah, sounds like an okay afternoon. Not every afternoon, but an okay afternoon. The second part here, games that that Casey plays when they're under the weather, XCOM or Civ 6, because I can take as long as I need to complete my turn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that's underappreciated. Is I used to love RuneScape for that same thing, where it's, you know, a game where you can kind of just go on autopilot or whatever.
Yeah. David, what does Roop say?
Roop says, Pokemon Yellow, emulated on PC. To make the game not feel so grinding, I used 1.5 speed multiplier. That, and playing for about 8 hours straight, really got me sick. Then he says that when he's sick, he mostly plays point-and-click games, mostly Gabriel Knight series.
Pro strategy.
I feel like I don't know. I feel like trying to solve a adventure game-style item puzzle while having a fever would just very quickly turn into a David Lynch movie.
It would lead to more derealization. Yeah. I think that written into this is the fact that Roop is familiar with Gabriel Knight games, so they're comfortable.
Yeah.
So it's like enough. Going through the motion and seeing the story stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I need to stream Gabriel Knight 2, like, really badly, actually. But yeah, Pokemon is taking scalps tonight. Ben, what does Alexander say?
That's a weird analogy. Alex says, I don't play a lot of games, but when I'm sick, most of the games I like are stressful and or intellectually rigorous in a way not appropriate for recovery. But I do love streaming games. Often I catch up on fighting game tournaments when I'm sick because it's a lot of content. And if I'm high on NyQuil or whatever, the commentators will tell me what I'm looking at. Very helpful.
Yeah. Well, no, even if you're on NyQuil and you're, like, fading in and out, like, you're just coming into something that looks similar, but you can follow it moment to moment, and it doesn't matter if you see the result.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been to fighting games, but I've found similar situations with, like, actually watching, like, martial arts tournaments, which I imagine would be kind of a similar idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jala, I'm going to skip down so you don't have to read this very long one. What does Austin say?
Austin says, Outlast whistleblower wedding scene actually threw up on stream.
So I feel attacked here because that is an anecdote that I share to talk about how effective Outlast is as a horror series. And I just did hear recently. So Austin, you're on notice, buddy.
we're going to have to go to the vomitorium and have a upchuck off.
I don't like the word upchuck off one bit, actually.
Is it going to make you vomit on podcast?
No, no.
So wait, is it possible that Austin himself also threw up on stream?
It's possible. It's possible. Okay. I don't know.
I assume you felt threatened by you know, no, that, and you needed to determine who was the better you know, projectile vomiter.
I got to that particular scene in the Outlast whistleblower stream, and it was really upsetting to the point where like I gagged a little bit, and some stuff came up that I had to spit into it. Gross. Yeah, and I think that Austin is holding it against me, but if you're not, and I'm just being paranoid, then I'm the dick here, and that's fine. Greg writes, not many games have made me feel ill. The one I recall was the F-Zero game on GameCube. Being played on a big screen TV, it made me a little motion sick with the upside down and loop-de-loop courses that the game had. As for when I'm sick, I tend to play something in bed on my DS or phone. Hopefully something big like an RPG to take my mind off of things. One story I've told in the past is that I had all four of my wisdom teeth taken out in February of 1992 when I was 16. It was really bad, and I was laid up in bed all week eating liquid food. I just bought Super Castlevania 4 and rented Street Fighter 2, and I played both games all week to help with the experience and still have fond memories of that to this day. The games, not the procedure. Ugh. Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to associate good games like that with my wisdom tooth extraction procedure. So good on you for taking that gamble. And F-Zero on GameCube is a nightmare in terms of like motion sickness stuff.
We have another one, another vote for that, yes, coming up next.
Let's do that. David, what does Phil say?
So Phil says, I used to get motion sick playing F-Zero. I'm not sure why, but that game always did a number on me. I feel like, wait a minute, you're not sure? Like, that game is crazy. and then he goes on to say, but when I'm under the weather, I usually like things that don't involve a lot of quick reactions. JRPGs, loot games, basically things I can grind out.
Makes sense. Yeah. Ben, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says, for question one, I can't think of any game that made me physically ill, but I did get vertigo from the start screen of Batman Arkham VR. I walked up to the railing and looked straight down, and it really made me feel like I was high up. answer for question number two, when I'm sick, I tend to play games that I can lay on the couch with a blanket on and not worry about how I do. So typically an RPG or MMO without getting into the dungeons, raids, etc.
Sometimes you have to walk over the overworld and find some herbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jolly, are you up to Ollie?
Sure.
Okay.
Ollie says, I was left feeling ill by Bayonetta 2. I don't know what it was, maybe the incredibly fast flashing lights, but I couldn't play it for more than a few minutes before I'd get a mild headache. That never happened with Bayonetta 1. And he says, when I'm sick, I like to play something I've mastered the controls of so I can do it from muscle memory. So Mario Kart or Dark Souls 2, both are like a clam salve.
I think clam salve is really good.
Clam salve is really great, but I think he means a calming salve.
Yes.
But, you know, a soothing balm.
Yeah, yeah. I have retreated to the shelter of souls in the past in these situations. So I hear you, Ollie.
I feel like you got to go topical. Go for Bloodborne.
That's all about sickness in a way. Chris writes, one, for the games that made them sick. I tried replaying some N64 shooters a couple of years ago, and Perfect Dark gave me motion sickness. I never noticed it as a kid, but I think the poor frame rate just made me want to hurl. And two, for the game they play when sick, generally when I'm sick, playing games results in fever dreams, so I typically opt for not playing them. However, I usually try to play SNES-era RPGs, since they don't require any major focus. Somebody RPGs. Responded with a little shock. Oh, you did, Jolly. You responded with a shocked face.
Yeah.
I understand what they're saying, though. It is kind of like tappa, 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 and light decision making and seeing a story.
Yeah. RPGs for the win.
Yeah.
I was making the shock face more because of the hurling.
Yes. I mean, I'll get one of my answers out of the way here. The most motion sick I've ever got. The most motion sick I ever got out of a game before Portal was South Park on the N64. That was rough because of the frame rate. Made me just it really put me off balance.
Not the quality of the game is what made you sick.
It was just like a general like first person shooter arena kind of thing. Like I don't think it was terrible, but I don't know.
The cow gun that you could shoot that landed on people.
Yeah. let's see, David. What does Rookie say?
Says, I learned as a child that I have a 1 hour limit on how long I can play a Game Boy game in a car without throwing up. What else was I going to do on a road trip? Talk to my family? Every wall in Metroid 2 needed to be bombed, just in case, dang it. And then for when he's sick, he says, I used to play Suikoden 1 and 2 when I was sick because the default button layout let you play the whole game using just one hand if you wanted to. More RPGs need to do this. Combine that with auto attack, and you could grind away while lying in bed or on the couch with your eyes closed.
Yeah. Suikoden's good for that. I really miss being able to read and play video games in a car. Or in any moving vehicle, actually. I can't even do it on a plane.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Audiobooks. Let's see, Ben, what does Nathan say?
Nathan says, for number one, Minecraft on any portable device sends me reeling. No idea why, because I must have over 1,000 hours logged on the PC version.
Field of view.
And then for number two, I have to be very careful not to play anything for the first time when I'm sick, or else I'll associate that game with being ill. Kind of like if you eat a new food and get food poisoning from it. Sorry, Morrowind.
Ooh.
Being sick is always a great time to start up another Soulsborne run, and though I know them all like the back of my hand and get immersed in the world. Nausea and fighting the rotten adds a little extra oomph to the experience.
Well, yeah, it's very similitude. Yeah.
I feel like Morrowind would be a great fever dream game.
Yeah, with all the potion mixing and jumping higher than the atmosphere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jella, what does Julia say?
Julia says, Tacoma and The Witness gave me headaches and dizziness. And for what she plays when ill, I only finished Bloodborne because I had the flu and spent several hours boom hammering the giant pigs in Murgo's Tower.
Those pigs are fuckers.
What? Okay.
No, they're just they're really bad enemies put in a really important place. So they can tend to be walls if you're not expecting them.
Those the ones with the disturbing
Realistic anuses and genitalia. Yeah.
Yeah, that when you sneak attack, you basically just, you know, give them a colonoscopy.
You act like you're a kappa and you're pulling out their little soul wad. Yeah. Let's see here. Keith says, one, Doki Doki Literature Club actually gut punched me so hard that I had to vomit. The warning said, not for the easily disturbed, which I dismissively ignored. You can call me easily disturbed. And two, on the brighter note, my go-to sick game is Darkest Dungeon. Smiley face emoticon.
Everyone gets sick in that game. You feel comparatively great.
Mystery loves company, yeah. And then, like, Doki Doki Literature Club, like, don't feel bad. There's that warning, and then the game lulls you into a false sense of security until it hits you with what it's going to hit you with. If I was in a worse place emotionally when that hit, it would have put me out of commission for a long time.
Dumb question, but what is a Doki Doki?
It is a Japanese onomatopoeia for heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that correct, Jala? So
yes.
I answered that with confidence, but I was uncertain.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. It's implied like, oh, there's a literature club and it's like a dating sim, but then it turns into something else about 2 hours in.
Ah.
Yeah. And then I'm going to hit this last one here real quick. I know I just did the other one. Philip says, greetings and good evening. One, Grand Theft Auto 5 made Philip sick. Initially, I set aside my moral compass in San Andreas and Grand Theft Auto 4 to revel in a little bit of free will aspects of games. However, by the time 5 came out, my center had returned. Rockstar's equation of subversive and edgy equals cynically discontented and carnal started to make me queasy and ill physically, not just ethically. Putting myself in any of these three characters who are really not living their best lives and immersing myself in that world would slowly put a knot on my stomach, one that would churn and ache every time that I played it. And then number two, for the game they will retreat to when they are ill, Demon's Souls. The color palette, the music, the pace, endlessly wandering world 1-1 over and over is the ails for what ills.
It's very poetic.
Yeah, and there are like drug missions in Grand Theft Auto 5 that, you know, gave me some motion sickness a little bit. But how I get motion sickness staring at a painting in a museum. I already did mine, the South Park. And then my go-to answer for this is any kind of management sim like Stardew Valley or on mobile like Kairosoft games like Game Dev Story or Pocket Spring Story, etc. Are go-tos for me. When I'm laying in bed and sipping Sprite and eating oyster crackers. David, how about you for both of these?
So I think for me, it would definitely be Dead Island. So the game has really bad motion blur effects. And then when you do a finishing like curb stomp animation, on any of the zombies, you're playing in first person and it basically whips your camera around as you know, rear back and then like forward to stomp on them.
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah, it's incredibly poorly conceived.
Hmm.
One of the many things.
How about one that you go to when you're sick?
Going to when I'm sick, generally anything, sort of grindy. Although I usually, when I'm sick, just kind of go to sleep for the duration.
That's a good strat. Yeah, I can get down with that.
Yeah. I definitely go for the Gordon Freeman approach to solving my problems.
The wrong man at the right time.
Yep.
Ben, how about you on both?
Yeah, I think Doom for the first one, like when I was a kid, that was one of the only games where I had to like stop and take a break because I was getting queasy playing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm sick, I don't really change my gaming behaviors too much. If I'm like sick and delirious, then I probably wouldn't play like a game that I really want to play, like a new game or something like that. But otherwise, it mostly stays the same as what I typically play. So
cool.
Magic and Rocket League.
Yeah. Angela, burned us out.
So I can't think of a game that has made me physically ill to play, but what has made me feel like have a reaction to that was, you know, sort of starting to get physical was The Walking Dead, the farm scene
The
Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be that. Mm-hmm. And then for what I play when ill, I have some strong memories of playing a lot of Skyrim and Plants vs. Zombies when I was recovering from my spinal stenosis being triggered. I was in physical mm-hmm. therapy for 6 months, and I couldn't look down or to the side. I couldn't paint or draw or do anything, even yoga. So I just could only basically stare forward. So guess who played a lot of video games? So over the weekend, as I mentioned, I played Danganronpa 3 and I kept falling asleep because of the meds. But basically, I usually will play about the same kinds of things when I am sick as when I am very stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning I will go for visual novels or JRPGs or a dungeon crawler, something either story based or just kind of like, you know, exploratory, maybe an adventure game or something. Just something lower, you know, not Twitch based. I don't really want a Twitch based. Like a dungeon crawler is a little bit closer to being a Twitch based kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it can be. It becomes routine enough that it's not quite it doesn't quite feel like grinding because you're exploring new areas, but the combat is kind of on autopilot for the most part for those. Yeah. So
nice. Well, thank you, Jolly, for putting that question up. And thank you, everybody, for responding. Good turnout this time. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Monday afternoons to watch for the question or prompt to go up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we quickly talk about the things and games that are exciting us, either in the good way or the bad way. There's a little bit of a reprise here. And speaking of that reprise, David, quickly, what is going on with more of this Blizzard and China nonsense?
Yeah, so Blizzard continues behaving badly.
Okay.
Basically, a Blizzard-controlled social media account on Chinese social media released a statement apologizing for the whole Hearthstone protest thing.
Right.
And most notably said that also we will protect our national dignity, which is creepy as heck.
Yeah.
To be fair, this was not strictly speaking Blizzard that made this statement. However, it was apparently a company that is like directly controlled by Blizzard or something like that.
Yeah, and a Blizzard didn't immediately say, hey, that wasn't cool, guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Also, someone has apparently found that the phrase "no China extradition" is apparently filtered out by the profanity filter for the English version of World of Warcraft.
I would need like another source on this to to verify that this is the case. If that is the case, though, fuck that. You should be able to say loudly and frequently that disappearing people is not okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I believe one of the things that was still kind of up in the air last time is we're saying, oh, by the way, some college Hearthstone players, you know, kind of stood in solidarity with the you know, the Hong Kong people and weren't banned, but now they are banned for 6 months. So,
yeah, no, fuck that. I'm laughing because that is ridiculous. And you laugh at things that are ridiculous.
Yeah. So it's going to be super, super interesting to see how BlizzCon goes.
Yeah. Don't get distracted by BlizzCon, everybody. Don't let corporate money censor free speech and ruin lives. Fuck that.
Yeah, I'm almost wondering, like, I heard some speculation wondering if there was any way they could straight up cancel BlizzCon, just because I don't see any scenario where it isn't, you know, a garbage fire for them.
Yeah, no. I can definitely see it being a at the very least a scene for protest. Hopefully not violence. Never want that. I can't see it being in their best interest at all, aside from saying like, hey, Diablo 4, look, everybody, everything's good. No, fuck that. Jala, what's your story?
So there is a game that just came out called Moons of Madness, and it's a Lovecraftian horror game about an astronaut living on Mars. And another influence for this game is The Case for Mars by Robert Zubrin, which discusses why humans should go there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was developed by a Norwegian developer called Rock Pocket Games.
Mm-hmm.
It just came out on PC on October 22 and will come to PS4 and Xbox in late January.
Mm.
This dev also focuses on other kinds of space-themed titles, but they are kind of the other ones that they have out are kind of more general audience and kind of cuter aesthetic than this. the producer and the creative director of this game said he wanted to create a story that makes you look at the world in a new way, and they focused on it being, setting a mood and having an atmosphere to it, so they did not get with, actual scientists to get all of the technical details correct. Their artistic license on that stuff.
Yeah.
In service to the Lovecraftian horror elements. But it looks pretty atmospheric and interesting, and I kind of wish it was on Switch since I haven't been doing much PC gaming. Mm-hmm. But it's $24.99 full price on sale through the release of this episode on Friday, November 1st, for 20% off on Steam. But I'm sure it will go on sale again for Christmas or something.
I am very displeased because my calendar that I had of upcoming releases had this coming out on October 31st. And it came out without me knowing. So yeah. I'm displeased with them for changing the date, but I'm pleased with you, Jala, for letting me know that it's out.
Yeah. So, it does look really interesting, and Cole, if you stream it, I'm absolutely going to be watching it.
I just may.
I don't know, if I like it enough from what I see in you streaming it, then I may be like, okay, bye. I'm not going to watch anymore. I'm going to go play it, but. We'll see. It just kind of depends. So
yeah,
you're the canary in the coal mine, spelled COKOLE.
Yep, one of those two. Yeah. Ben, how about you? More horror game news.
Yeah, it's just that Last of Us Part 2 got pushed to May for a release date, May 2020 instead of February. Game director Neil Druckmann released a statement just basically saying, like, hey, we want to make the game good. We're going to take another 3 months.
We want to avoid that weird cluster pileup that's happening in Q1 with Final Fantasy VII, the remake, and a bunch of other stuff that's coming out like in 3 weeks of each other.
Oh, you think it's like a business decision why they moved it from February to May?
Could be both.
Yeah. I don't know. So this story just made me try to think of a time where I was upset by a game company waiting like another 3 months or 6 months or a year to like release a game because they didn't think it was high quality. I don't really get impatient with that type of stuff, I don't think.
There's already so much to play.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be a weird thing to be like vociferously upset about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as it ends up good, yeah.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. I mean, we've repeated this quote how many times, and who knows if he actually said it, but it's attributed to Shigeru Miyamoto, like, a delay lasts 6 months, a bad game lasts forever. Mm-hmm. You know? So, I don't know. Seems reasonable. If they think that's right, then I trust them that they think that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me, speaking of reception of things, this is a positive thing that Steam is doing. Weird to talk about that, since that's not usually the case. Steam review bombs are a thing that happens. Additionally, a thing that happens is people who play 1,000 hours of Warframe and say this is a bad game because of some change or other. Generally, if we accept that Steam reviews, the goal of those is to help people buy the right games instead of help people buy as many games as possible. You know, if we accept that that is the goal, then this change seems pretty good, which is Steam is going back and prompting people who have played a bunch of a game after reviewing it if they want to change their opinion. So people are reporting this independently. It's not like a thing that has been officially rolled out, but saying like, yeah, I reviewed this game after like 10 hours, but then I put in, 90 more afterwards. And Steam was like, hey, do you want to revise this to make that review as useful as possible? Right.
Like, no, I really like hate playing games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People review games for a lot of different reasons. Not all of them altruistic. Not all of them, point out squeaky stares to people, etc. But this, in retrospect, seems so obvious as a thing that a company with that data, it seems so obvious that a company with that data would do it, that, like, why wouldn't they? It makes reviews more useful, and if it stops like weird shitty review bombs from people who actually like really enjoy the game, gets them in a cooler moment when they can decide like, actually I want to revise this, it makes the system more useful for everybody, and I think that that is a good and canny move on their part.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. As long as there are no disagreements with that, we can conclude. How do you all feel about butting it up?
I feel buttons.
Yeah. The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to Level 303. Jala, thank you so much for hopping on when you're feeling under the weather. It wasn't necessary, but it was greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I was here.
I want to call people's attention once more to Dennis's GoFundMe for the Deck of Wonders card game to get a print and play version of that and help support the Hong Kong protesters. I will put a link in the post here, and also you can do a search for Deck of Wonders GoFundMe. It'll be up there. Otherwise, if people are listening, they know what they can do vis-a-vis Patreon and vis-a-vis ratings and reviews. I want to keep this episode from getting any longer, so I will cut the plugs short unless there's anything major I'm forgetting. Is there anything I'm forgetting? Okay. Nope. I have been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch TV at the username DuckFeedTV.
I'm David Meinsmith, right here.
I'm Jalachan in places.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
Yep, and stick around for some titles. I only have one, but I feel pretty solid about it. Clam salve.
That's the one I have too.
I have a few more.
Okay.
I have taken scalps.
Okay.
Vomitorium. And soul wad.
I'll talk about the kappas. It's a thing. Yeah. Ben, all you had was clam salve.
Correct.
Okay, David, what you got?
I got nothing, although clam salve is pretty good.
Any arguments against clam salve?
There's objections with it, but not against the title.
Okay.
This means that this is the second time that Ollie has said something in the multiplayer that is now becoming a title.
Oh, well, what was the first?
Ollie don't digital.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay.
He's a good one. That doesn't mean to count against it. I'm just pointing out he's that good.
No, we've known that Ollie's been a good one. I would feel bad if it was two typos that we were holding against him, like making fun of him. But the first one was actually just a fun comment. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm gonna go. Jala, please feel better.
Yeah. I'm gonna try.
Okay.
I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to eat something and then I'm going to go to sleep.
Yeah.
So
I will do likewise. Take care, everybody.
All right, see you guys.
Bye.